All right, hello everyone. It's Nathan here. And we are doing our Inner Circle deal analysis call. And I think we may have a few people on the line. If you're here already, let's give it a few minutes. Let's see who we have on the line.
Hey Nathan, it's Forrest.
Hey Forrest, how are you, bud?
Good, yourself?
Doing good. How was your week this past week?
Extremely busy. So it was good, but it was busy. I had a wholesale deal close. I had the two properties that were next door to one another. I killed those two deals because every time looked at the renovation budget, it got more and more, and I got emotional in the deal. And I was trying to figure out a way to make it work. Well, if I do this, if I do that, so I said, you know what?
Right.
I said, what would a real estate investor do? And I came up with the decision that they would cancel the deal, and so that's what I did.
Yeah. Nice. All right.
And then we had a 3-day boot camp with Jim Ingersoll and Quincy Long and Walter Walford and Mary Hart. All those people.
Was that all in the local area there?
Yeah, it was in Richmond, but it was a lot of people from all over the place, you know, that came all over the country, and, you know, we shored up some relationships and met some new people for possible funding and stuff like that, you know, some new relationships and stuff. And my wife's stage and business sponsored some of the events, so she got some new customers from that. So, we've been busy.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, her business is booming too, right, you said?
Excuse me?
Yeah, her business has been booming a lot recently, right?
Oh, yeah.
She's been pretty busy herself.
Yeah, actually, we've outgrown the home office, so she's
that's great.
In the process of leasing commercial space. We're moving through that together, and she should be in an office warehouse park. It's a one in the air park, so it's economical, you know, like a 600 square foot thing.
Sure.
But
sure.
I'm training an assistant up right now, and we're kind of getting tired of her coming to the house. So we're going to put her computer in there, and you know, a lot of it she can do from home, but we're trying to turn her into a personal assistant, more or less. So we need somewhere that they can go. Yeah.
Right.
We're trying to grow up.
That's good.
Yeah.
Try to grow up. I like the way you put that.
Yeah.
Try to grow up. Okay, man. That's good stuff. Good stuff. Good to hear.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
Yeah,
all right. Let's see who else we have on the call. Who else do we have with us here?
Susan Hudson in Reston, Virginia.
Hi, Susan. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. This is my first call in a long time to one of Larry's Inner Circle calls. So I just read the email, and the timing was perfect, and it's noontime.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I don't know if you heard the gentleman I was just speaking with. His name is Forrest, and I don't know how far you are away from each other, but he's in Virginia as well. So you said you're from where?
Reston, R-E-S-T-O-N, close to Washington.
Okay.
Hey, we're about an hour and 45 minutes from Reston. I work there sometimes with some contractors.
And what city are you in?
We're in Ashland, Virginia.
Oh, yes.
Just north of Richmond.
Yes. I know it well. It's just down Route 7 from me.
Right. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. No, I think I'm in Ashburn. I'm in Ashland, Virginia. So down by Richmond.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 7 runs east and west. I'm south of 95. I'm south on 95. But anyway, same state, same license plate tag.
Yeah. And Susan, just so if you could shoot me over an email, I would love to connect you and Forrest. Let me just give you my email now. It's Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, mm-hmm. at LarryGoins.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that way also I can have your email as well. All right. Let's see who else is on the call. Who else do we have here? All right. Might be just us three amigos. I know last week we had like 13 people on the call. But usually on these calls, we analyze deals. Susan, just to kind of give you an update on what we do on these calls, we usually go over any deals that are currently being analyzed or currently being worked on. Today is the buyer and seller call. I'm sorry. Today's the flat. I don't even know what day it is. Sorry, the second Wednesday of every month is the deal analysis call, and the fourth Wednesday of every month is the buyer and seller. So I'll kind of kick it off that way, and we're going to talk about dealing with buyers and sellers, conversations to have. I'll actually kick it off with a short story here. I was working with a coaching student that I work with on a regular basis. Pretty much every week we jump on the phone, and he actually was making his first offer. He had never made an offer before, and one of the biggest things that he confronted was, what's that? Oh, okay. One of the things that he was confronted with was a seller who thought their property was worth more than it actually was, right? So that's when you have a seller who's trying to sell their home and the value is a lot higher. I don't know. Susan, is that – I'm not sure whose fault that is.
It's not Susan.
Yeah, it's not Forrest. I'm muting myself.
So we have someone else. Okay. Who else do we have on the call? Oh, man. I don't know who that is.
You want to listen to it?
Hello?
Why not? I'm looking at you on the phone.
Oh, man. Okay. It's like someone was like,
well, 9575.
That sounds like someone I know from California.
9575.
Okay.
How do I get
there? There's a back road there or something.
9575. Okay, I'm okay. Okay. Now what?
Hello. Caller number 12. What's going on? Hello? Okay. Well, it's gone right now. Okay. So if you're on the line and if you're chatting in the background, try to put your phone on mute. You can hit *6 to do that. So as I was saying, I was working with a student just recently, and he was talking to a seller who had high expectation of what the property was worth. So property was actually worth $220. That's what the market was bearing right now in that particular market. However, the seller was trying to sell the property for more than what it was worth, $10,000 more. And so when he went in there, he makes the offer, but he was making the offer, about 30% below market value. The house needed repair. It wasn't like the house was spotless or anything. It needed repairs. But the seller was offended. Like the seller verbally said, and I was actually on the call, the seller was like offended that the offer was so low, but yet there was going to need at least $40,000 worth of repairs. When we got off the phone with the seller, me and the student, we got back on the phone and we went over what happened. And I said, this can happen whether it's an agent talking to a seller, whether it's a real estate agent, or even us as an investor talking to a seller. The high expectation that some people can have, especially in these times, in this kind of market right now, the sellers can think, well, hey, everything else is selling really hot. You know, everything else is getting, you know, maybe bidded over the asking price. Why can I? But the reality is what we have to use is our rehab estimates. You know, rehab estimates are a great leveraging tool to use in order to bring down price. Now, actually, and I think, Forrest, you can probably speak to this because I know you do, you know, you do rehab work. But first I'll share it, and then, Forrest, you can chime in and talk about it if you do this. So one of the things that rehabbers will do is when they're dealing directly with motivated sellers is they will – let me give you a hypothetical example. Let's say the property is selling for $100,000, okay? So the property is selling for $100,000. The rehabber, because they want to get the property off the market, they'll go in, let's say, around – they'll either, let's say, give them asking or very close to asking. So let's just hypothetically say $95,000. So the homeowner has it listed at $100,000. They put the property – the rehabber puts the property under contract for $95,000 just to get the property off the market. However, when they go in there and they do their re-inspection and they inspect the property, they see that and they present that, hey, this property, you know, it needs, let's just hypothetically say, $30,000 to work. So what they do is they take their $95,000 offer and they say, hey, this offer isn't going to work because you have this, 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 and all these problems, and it's going to be $30,000. We need to drop our price by $30,000. Here is our new offer. So that's what a lot of like rehabbers do, and that's what they use as negotiating power. They use the rehab estimate. So with that said, Forrest, I wanted to ask you, have you ever done that in your rehab job before? Like you go in there with one price and then you got to bring it back down?
So I have not used that technique. I know that it is a technique. I tried to.
I tried to get it on the other phone, which has a better speaker, but unfortunately.
Talking to me.
Yeah. I don't know. I can hear you. I can hear you a bit. I just don't understand whose phone that is. I don't know whose phone that is.
Okay.
Since there's only two of us, should we hang up and call in again?
Nah, he can mute everybody.
It does. Let me try doing that, maybe.
I can hear it.
Okay, so you'll hit Forrest. You'll hit star 6 to unmute yourself. Let me try muting everyone.
All right, I'm here.
Forrest?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. All right. So have you ever had that experience before?
Not successfully. So I have taken the strategy, whether it's right or wrong, the strategy that I employ is I try to encompass everything at one time. I know because – and the reason why I try to employ that strategy, I try to overestimate or, you know, not have to renegotiate. And the reason why is I feel like I think that I would feel, you know, that somebody's trying to get one over on me if they're coming back and trying to renegotiate the deal, you know, in the middle. So but I understand the power of that because a lot of people do that and, you know, are quite successful at it. And, you know, during the initial walkthrough, you can't find everything that's wrong anyway. That's why you have an inspection period. So I should,
I should,
you know, try to do that, you know, come in at a little bit higher offer based off of the superficial work and, you know, not be so... Try not to be so good and thorough in the initial, you know, contract phase and then come back and try to renegotiate afterwards. Even if I see something, you know, that, you know, I should investigate further, I should wait for the inspection period to do that. And I think that might be better. Once you get into a con, I think and here's the other side of the coin, kind of what you talked about. I think you use the leverage of, you know, fear of loss. If you're in a contract and, you know, you go back to them and go, you know, listen, you know, we found this is wrong, you know, and we're going to have to, you know, capture this cost somehow. You know, you wouldn't,
right.
you wouldn't want to, you know, get into a house you're going to lose money with, you know, so.
Right.
And that was one of my mistakes in the last deal I just let go is I didn't do my due diligence fast enough during the 10-day inspection period. So I had no leverage to really renegotiate a contract. Now, likewise, I don't think that they would have renegotiated $30,000 off of a $55,000 contract, you know, because that's about how severe it was once, you know, got all the codes and everything together on what it would actually cost to add square footage to that house. So, anyway, so I haven't done it, but I understand the value and I should start doing it.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I can actually share a story that real deal story that happened towards the end of last year in 2017, where the seller was trying to get the seller had it priced less than about $10,000 less than market value, valued at $75,000, had it listed for $67,000, ended up. Made an offer, 30% below. I think we came in around 45, I think it was, the first time. The offer got accepted. However, the problem was when we did an inspection, there was like about $20,000 worth of work. That was a shocker. And the sellers thought everything was decently okay. And that's because she was living in the property for 10 years, and it just became normal to her, you know. But she didn't realize that it's going to need, you know, for example, part of the roof needed to be fixed, and the AC unit plus the duct work needed to be done. That was over $6,000. So anyway, this total bill was racking up to about $20,000, and we had to go back in and renegotiate, you know, because the initial offer, based on pictures alone, and, you know, having someone just walk the property really quick, wasn't to its fullest extent, like a full inspection. So we ended up getting, and you know what? You know what I did? I'll give you an example of what we did in this deal. We literally took the report right back, the inspection report. It was very detailed. I literally just forwarded that right to the seller. And I said, listen, I said, I know my assistant talked to you when we got this property under contract for 45, but I got to tell you, look over this entire inspection report and you will see what needs to be done. And you're going to see why we can't buy this at $45,000 from you. And she looked it over. She ends up calling me back within an hour or so. And she says, wow, I didn't realize my property needed that much work, right? And I said, yeah, I said, I said, do you know how much it costs for an AC unit plus duct work and all that? And she's like, no, I have no idea. And so I, you know, brought up that realization. Anyway, we renegotiated the property. We got it a lot lower. I think we ended up picking up like all in for like $31,000, I think it was. And that was just to bring reality to the situation. So I know some people do it as a tactic, like to get a property, you know, a hot property, get it off the market really quick. Sometimes it just happens, during you making the offer, you know, and actually seeing. But I've actually seen, you know, I know rehabbers that have done that who go in a little bit higher just to get the motivated seller property off, you know, get the property off the market so they're first thing, you know. So, that can happen. It all depends on your strategy, but I think it's always important to do that renegotiation with the seller, once or twice, because it can help, you know, get a better price. It can bring realistic numbers to the table. So I think it's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe you'll try it next time on your next one, you know? Forrest, maybe you give it a shot on your next one. Yeah.
I will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can help out. All right, I did want to kind of open it up again to anyone on the call, by the way. If you had a question to share about working with sellers, working with buyers, maybe building a buyer's list, I think you have to hit *6 to unmute yourself. You could do that. Also, Susan, I would love for you to get in and kind of give me an update on what you've been working on. I know you said you haven't been on one of these calls in a while, but have you worked with sellers before? Have you worked with cash buyers before? Kind of give me an update on that as well. So in order to do that, you hit *6 to unmute your phone.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, I attended Larry's Inner Circle meeting last May or June in Charlotte, and I have not done a deal since then. I've done lots of activity, but and no deals. And hold on a second, I'm moving. I'm working at a day job, and I moved into a conference room. Anyway, so I've taken lots of actions, but no results yet. And sometimes I'm discouraged. The actions have been over a little more than a year. I've done 3 mailings, direct mail to out-of-state absentee owners out-of-state, and no real results. The few calls I've gotten just haven't turned into a deal. Either I think people only know 2 ways to sell real estate, either FSBO by themselves or pay a broker and pay 6%. So people are not aware of other ways to sell real estate. So part of it maybe they don't understand, and maybe I'm not explaining it correctly. So anyway, that's what I've been doing for months or almost a year. I guess my real question is how I'm finding deals. Is I've tried direct mail, and I'm not thrilled with my results. I'm looking at using Every Door Direct and sending out flyers to my local postal system. And occasionally I get on Realtor.com or Zillow just looking at the listings, mostly by zip code, you know, looking for a good deal. So does anybody have any input on how to uncover deals besides direct mail and absentee owners?
Sure. First of all, let me jump in and add to that. First of all, when you send me that email, I'm going to send you a list of ways to find motivated sellers, okay? Because I believe any savvy investor is going to tell you that the first and best way, foremost best way, is going to be working with the owner directly. And that's just because one primary reason, you don't have to pay the 6% commission, right? But I think it's even more than that. I think it's not even just about the money. I think sometimes some agents, if they're not investor mindset based, like if they're just a listing agent, if they just work with new homeowners or people who are relocating, it's a lot harder to find someone, an agent who's has an investor mindset, and that's someone who can work on your behalf. So not just all about the whole 6% and, you know, paying commission and having that whole middleman person in between. It can make it a little bit easier when you're dealing with motivated sellers without the agent involved. But if you can find a really good agent that works with other investors that can be on your power team, as I call it, then that could be really beneficial to you. That could really be beneficial to you. Okay, so if you want to shoot me an email, I can give you a whole list of ways to find motivated sellers. Now, I just wanted to kind of touch on your list of, doing direct mail. One of the most important things with direct mail is consistency. So, yes, you have a list. That's fine. You just want to make sure that list, maybe you've got to make sure that list is up to date. There's a few big companies out there that do really well with this. One is called List Source. Another one is called Listability, and another one's called Melissa Data. Those are some of the best ones. Yeah.
I've used Melissa Data and Listability.
Sure. Yeah, those are fine. And then just refining that list. What's really important though about direct mail is consistency. And that means even if you're just mailing, if it's 100 every 2 weeks, like every other week you're mailing, doing a direct mail piece of 100 pieces, then you just have to be consistent with that direct mailing. And that means consistency for months at a time. Like it could be 2 months or 3 months. Because most of the time what happens is people do one drop and they expect a whole bunch of calls to come in. But sometimes nothing really happens until the third drop or fourth drop out. And also the marketing pieces have to be a little bit creative. You know, that's another thing. So that, you know, when it comes to real estate and marketing for motivated sellers, it really comes down to marketing. This is a marketing business. A few other ways I can give you four different, you know, ways off the top here, off top of mind is, you know, have you done any yard signs before? Have you tested that out in your market? Sometimes it works in some markets, sometimes it doesn't. But that tends to be a really one of the top, you know, the top five is yard signs. Have you ever tried stuff like that before?
Yes, bandit signs. My bandit sign, mm-hmm. I tried several messages, but lately I've been running
okay.
Buddy Buys Houses Fast and a phone number.
Uh-huh.
And my point
okay.
is that phone number is one that I buy from an email, an e-voice source. And
okay.
that phone number is forwarded to my cell phone. When that number
okay.
shows up on my cell phone, I know my
sure.
advertising's working and where it came from.
Right.
And there,
great.
So it, there is no person named Buddy. When somebody calls and says, "Hi, I need to speak to Buddy," I know automatically it came off of a sign. And I say, "Well,
right,
Buddy's
exactly.
not in. Buddy's not in, but I'm his office manager. Can I help you?"
Right. So, exactly. That's fine.
So
that's
yes,
fine.
I've used bandit signs.
Larry. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, no,
my real issue is trying to get the signs out. I have to do it myself on a Friday night, and I'd like to find a
okay.
person to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, actually, I can shoot me an email. I can email you some. You can easily put out a Craigslist ad to where you'll probably find, or even Facebook Marketplace under the jobs section. I'm sorry, if Facebook jobs. In Facebook, there's a section of jobs. Or Craigslist under the, you know, for, you know, hiring people for gigs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can easily find someone on there. You know, a step up from those, in my opinion, there are people sometimes at your local real estate group who are called bird dogs. I'm sure you've heard of that before. So they're bird dogs where they're finding properties. Sometimes they're looking for other gigs, like other things to do. That's why they're bird dogging in the first place and finding properties. You could actually, you know, call a few bird dogs and say, "Hey, would you be willing to put out signs as well?" And I like to use them as well because they're already familiar with real estate. You know, they're already in the business, you know, real estate mindset. So you could do that, or you could just find someone on Craigslist. Just make sure that when you have someone else putting out your signs, that they're taking pictures and they're, you know, you're able to verify that the signs have been put out, or you're local and you can drive around and see it depending on where you are, you know, to the signs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Larry has a method of a website that
yeah.
they can be tracked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so if
I
you want to use
I,
that, definitely.
I haven't used it, but I've heard Larry talk about it. I'd have to get the data
mm-hmm.
and get the info again from you.
Sure, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, so that's you know, signs always tend to be like the top, one of the top five. Like I said, I can email you a whole list of ways that, you know, give you different ideas. Now, what's important from that list is not to try all of them at the same time, but look at the ones that you say, okay, I've done that. Have I given this one 100% of my effort, right? Number seven on the list, have I even tried this one, and what were my results? Or just find a few from that list and say, okay, I've never done this before. Let me try putting some effort into this one, 100% effort, and see my results. Because there's many different ways to get motivated sellers. You just kind of find the one that really you enjoy or the one that works for you. You test a few, see the one that works for you. Because I have some people who do not like putting out signs or don't want to put out signs at all, so they use other methods, right, like direct mail, for example. To answer your question about the postal service, the direct mail piece going out, The only thing with that marketing piece is because I believe that marketing piece goes out to everyone, right? Like the whole coupon pack and all that from the post office? Is that the one?
Well, it goes out to every residential address on that route, and I get to pick the route. I mean, a route could have 300
right.
houses. It could have 2,000 houses.
Yeah.
Anyway, you get to choose.
Right, right. Yeah. So I'm familiar with that. Here's the only thing that I see that is not very beneficial is, yes, it may be going out to, let's say, 2,000 houses, but out of those 2,000 houses, is that person who's getting it faced with that problem, selling
mm-hmm.
their house now? So I would say you're better off probably, if you're going to do direct mail, pump your money into a marketing list rather than, because those 2,000 houses on that route, they may not have that issue. Plus your marketing piece has to be geared towards that person. So I think you're better off if you're going to do direct mail, spend it with a marketing list. And the reason why I say that, I've never done that postal mailer, where it goes out to all the houses. I forgot the name, but you mentioned it. But I've heard other people do it, and they don't get very good results.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why I bring it up. And that just comes down to, like, again, targeting the right person, right? Targeting the right person.
Well, in my absentee owners, in the different list list sellers, the list companies that sell addresses,
mm-hmm.
I've always
mm-hmm.
asked for absentee owners, out-of-state owners, thinking it's a problem to own a house that's out of their state.
Mm-hmm.
But I used different sources. One was Listability. One was Melissa Data. And one of the list brokers led me to Equifax. And I got a list of 1,000 or 1,500 30 days late or more on their mortgage. And so my point is I've tried different things, and each one of those was a mailing of about 1,000. And I got a few calls back, but no results.
And you mentioned that you got some calls back. How did those calls go, by the way? Like, what happened with the seller? What was their position? What was their situation?
Well, on my first mailing, I got three calls back, reached all three of the people at different times. Two of the people were – I ordered zip codes in my immediate area so that I could go see the houses quickly. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Went to see the houses, met two of the owners, saw their house, took pictures, and basically they wanted full market price for their house. Because they saw that I charged no commission, they were thinking they could save 6% on a $500,000 house. So So anyway, full market price. The third lady was a lady that didn't speak good English, and we never actually met. Really, it was a language problem. I guess she could read English in my letter, but she couldn't communicate well enough that I could understand her, let alone negotiate business with her. So that was my first mailing. When I did the mailing to the people 30 days later or more on their mortgage, some people were really far behind, and I mean, like 6 and 12 months. That shocked me. I didn't think of a mortgage lender would let somebody go 12 months, but there's all sorts of stories. And my issue was I didn't have a private lender or anybody lined up in order to make up those back payments in order to take over their mortgage. So on that particular mailing, I got maybe 3 or 4 calls. One of the places I had mailed to a local Reston address. We're in the major suburbs of Washington, D.C. And the guy said, well, my first house is fine, the one I live in. I have a vacation house up in the mountains. And he gave me the address, but the point is it sounded remote and it wasn't anything I thought I wanted to pursue. It didn't sound like a house that meets my criteria because it was too remote. He was also many months behind on that remote property. So I'm not sure that mailing to 30 days late on their mortgage is – in fact, one of the things I was upset with, I got that from Equifax. People on the mailing list, I would just go – I have a script, And the point is, part mm-hmm. of my script is as I'm leading them through it and mention something like, are there any payments that need to be made up? Are there any back payments that need to be handled? And right. a lot of people would say no, meaning I bought a list that's 30 days late, and yet people are telling yeah. me they're not late. So that made me not trust Equifax. I don't know what to think about buying that list.
Okay.
So three different experiences, all with less than 2,000 names, and no results, and I mixed results, but no sales.
Sure. Okay, and you brought up the 30-day late people. This is going to come back to your exit strategy, right? Exit strategy being, when you get a property under contract, what is your goal? Like, what are you going to do with it, right? And that's mm-hmm. like number one. That's like the number one thing. First, segment your market, where you're going to invest. Number two, what are we going to do in that market, right? So mm-hmm. that would be, what is your exit strategy? So if you got a property that someone is...
One more thing, Nathan. She said she didn't have money for that. She said she didn't have money to get that mm-hmm. house out of the rears. But she could have wholesaled
right.
that stuff too.
Well, and good point. At the time, what I was looking, and still is my goal today, because I have a day job that pays the bills, I'm still looking to wholesale this whole calendar year and just pick up a wholesale fee for cash flow and pay off some debt. And then in 2019, I'll still uncover deals. I'm hoping to choose a marketing method that I know is paying off, that works. So I want to mm-hmm. choose my marketing methods that work and my groups to network with and attend, and I need to get a system in place for marketing,
right.
including mailing, bandit signs, networking, et cetera. So mm-hmm. I want to get all that working, and then I'll do some, maybe 5 or 6 wholesales a year, and 5 or 6 of the properties I'll keep for rent to own. My definition
sure.
of rent to own is a person that has cash to put down but has credit mm-hmm. problems. Well, they can put
sure.
down their cash on a house, and I have 8 years as a mortgage broker. So
mm-hmm.
while they're renting the house, they put down cash. They're renting it for mm-hmm. me to cover any mortgage I've taken over from the owner.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give the owner a balloon note of 2 years or more, because in 2 years I can turn somebody's credit around and get them able to qualify for a mortgage, and then we all go to settlement and cash out, and the seller gets paid.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking to do maybe 6 wholesales a year and 5 or 6 rent-to-owns per year, and the rent-to-owns will cash out at different times depending on how fast I can qualify their credit score for a mortgage.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, so... And thank you for sharing that, by the way. That does bring more insight to what I'm about to say. And again, going back to what are you going to do with the property, right? What is the goal, right? So if you're going to say, hey, I'm going to wholesale, and I'm going to wholesale properties, you want to get really specific about the property. Because, for example, if you're doing wholesaling, the majority of the houses that are wholesaled are typically going to, like, rehabbers, right? Typically. That's, like, 95% of them are going to go to a rehabber situation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you may have that, because that's usually the advantage of getting a wholesale deal. So keep in mind that sometimes the whole 30-day late option, if that person is in their home, I bet you they're probably pretty much going to want to stay in their home, right? Then, you know, they're just having some financial issues. So that list may not be the best option moving forward, because you're having someone who's in the home. Now, if you were doing it, let's say, you could do, what do they call those, wraparound mortgages, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could do, you know, lease options. That may be
mm-hmm.
something that you could operate with them. Or some people do loan modifications, stuff like that, if that was your niche for those kinds of people. However, if you're going to do mostly wholesaling, then you have to just go after that target person, like you said, who is maybe an out-of-state owner and they got a house just sitting there and it needs to be rehabbed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we were just driving around in your car right now, like we were just driving around your neighborhood or your route from work to home, I mean, can you imagine any properties in your area that you may have seen, like dumpsters outside of the front of the house or white trucks outside, and you see a bunch of contractors running around and stuff like that? Can you think of any neighborhoods like that in your area?
Well, not neighborhoods, but in order to uncover that, for instance, I just had a pest control person. Somebody comes once a quarter and handles termite protection at my house.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
The point is, I have cards printed up that says, I buy houses and I want you to find them. And on
uh-huh.
the card, it tells them when they see a vacant house, and mm-hmm. when they see a vacant house, take a picture, send me the address, and I'll send them $20. So
okay.
I'm looking for FedEx men. This was a pest control person driving around in his bug truck.
Yeah.
And he comes to my house. Well, it's not the same person. It's a point. But four times
sure.
a year, I've got a bug person coming to my house. I'm trying to catch
right.
my mailman, my FedEx man, anybody
right.
who delivers to my house, and I'm giving him these cards. And I'll
sure.
give you $20 cash if you find a vacant house
yeah.
for me.
That's great. I love your idea. I love the strategy because you're delegating, and I think that's awesome. I love that. I did want to give you just this is just another idea, okay, about the way you're paying, how much you're paying, and you're basically paying per lead, okay?
Right. Right.
Just a different idea here is instead of them just sending you a property with an address like a bird dog
mm-hmm.
would, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of them paying them $20 just for that address,
mm-hmm.
I would, in my recommendation, would be up how much you're going to give them, like increase it to $500 to $1,000, but they don't get paid until the deal closes.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is you'd be shelling out a lot of $20. You really would. You could in a week or two, it could be $500, you know. And the lead might not go anywhere. So it's,
mm-hmm.
it's really expensive lead. What I would say is change the value of what you're giving them. 500 to
mm-hmm.
1,000, probably in that area might be, maybe
mm-hmm.
500 to 1,000 bucks is nice. And then say, listen, you send me the properties. I'll keep track of them with, your name beside it, whatever. It'll be tagged to you. And then when the deal closes, I'll be sending you a check for 1,000 bucks. And
mm-hmm.
that gets them much more of a motivated and, and it saves you rather than, because they may not send you every ideal property, but yet they feel like, hey, I sent you three properties and it's not matching your criteria. They're waiting for their money and you're getting frustrated because you have to give them money and it doesn't match the criteria. Does that make sense?
Yes, and to add, I'm excited about what
yeah.
you just said.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking that I would even combine both. What I mean is offer to pay them maybe $10 as just
uh-huh.
as any kind of a lure, and
okay.
$500 to $1,000 when it closes. So I'll at least hear from somebody for $10, and
sure. okay.
and start tracking it. So
mm-hmm.
I like that idea about
sure.
$500 to $1,000 when it goes to closing. Yeah.
Yeah. Test it out. Yeah. Either way, test it out. Maybe you have a
yeah.
certain criteria that you do give them. Your best
yeah.
bet is, I love what you did, actually, I love what you did with the pest control. I'll tell you why. One of my, I call them deal hunters. I know some people call them bird dogs. I personally call them deal hunters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I pay them more and they do more than a bird dog would do. One of my deal hunters, what they did is we found a property that definitely needed to be wholesaled. The guy who was selling it was a junk removal company.
Mm-hmm.
He removed
mm-hmm.
junk out of people's homes. And
mm-hmm.
so he would come across properties that, that were like really, some of them were really trashed up and there was no one in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he became a great lead source for our company. And we've done actually quite a few deals with him already. So
I love that one.
At the end of the year.
I love that one. It makes me want to look up junk removal on the internet in my local area and call every one of them. Because I bet they're cleaning out houses.
Yeah, they're cleaning out houses. Yeah, exactly. They could be cleaning out, properties that maybe people are still living in them, but maybe he could pass a card along, or he's cleaning out empty houses that need to be cleaned up. So vice versa, either one. And in addition to that, when it comes to what's the other category I was going to tell you? I just spaced out. Sorry. I'm sorry. It'll probably come back to me. But the people that are – oh, there it is. Here it comes. Mold inspection or restoration companies. You know, a lot. I have a client in South Carolina, and he told me he's actually a realtor as well. And he said, Nathan, I really don't want to deal with people who are trying to list their properties or anything like that. And he said, I want to find properties that are empty, so it doesn't hit any of my realtors. Me being a realtor. And I said, oh, okay, sure, no problem. So he said, what do you think about mold? You know, and I said, yeah, absolutely, if you enjoy it. And he said, yeah, I just feel like most people run from mold and don't want to deal with it, and most people like run away from burned out properties, but I really want to focus on mold. What should I do? And I said, that's a great question. Why don't you contact mold restoration companies and create like a referral program so that they can get paid on every lead they send you or something like that out of every deal? And so on and so forth. So that's what he does, actually. He partners with mold inspection companies, mold restoration companies, and he gets the leads from there, and he buys the houses that way, and then he pays the mold restoration company. He pays them out of there a referral fee. That's all he does. That's all he does is just mold companies, so mold properties. Yeah, so,
that's an
opportunity there. Yeah, another way to find people who don't, need to sell their house. Some investors just go after condemned properties, stuff like that. They just go for specific ones. Again, I just want to circle back around to the part where in your area, especially if you're doing mail locally, direct mail locally or yard signs locally, in your area, there is properties that are being rehabbed, right? There are properties that are being fixed up. And it's a great way to identify what parts of the area are being revitalized. And that way you can actually find your cash buyers. It's a good way to find your cash buyers, kind of just pull up to the property and, if it works in your time schedule, but, pull up to the property, talk to some of the people who are rehabbing or talk to the owner who's there, and they can kind of, you can create even a partnership there with a cash buyer to say, hey, I'll find you your next deal. Does that make sense? So, because building cash buyers in wholesaling, building a cash buyer list is just as important as finding motivated sellers.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So I think you're on some great ideas. You got some great strategies there. I'm glad you've already talked to a few sellers, and had those conversations. You're absolutely right. Not every seller. Most sellers just know two ways. That's it. And a lot of sellers, you can't sometimes even talk to a seller about, oh, hey, we'll do a wraparound mortgage or we'll do that. They don't know that stuff. Most people don't, right? They know, renting and owning, and then sometimes even the mortgage process is very new for a lot of people. They don't have any idea. So, so just be mindful when you're dealing with sellers as well that they're not going to know all the terminology that you and I know. And we just kind of have to speak to their level, to what they know about
I agree with that.
Selling your home.
I need to keep it. Yes, it occurred to me a long time ago. I need to keep it simple and no language, no jargon.
It's very true. I'm selling a property. We're closing on Friday, and the homeowner who's buying the property, it's an owner finance deal. And it's their first property, husband and wife. They never bought a property before. And so so I had to actually, jump on the phone for about 15 minutes and just say, okay, hey, here's how we're doing it. And normally, actually, I don't even do that part. I'm just stepping a step. Normally, I have my assistant, who's not around right now, jump on the phone and do that. So I got on the phone and I just said, hey, this is the process. This is what we're going to do. You're going to do this, this, and this, and I'll put it all in an email. You just follow the steps in that email. So sometimes, again, in this situation, as a new homeowner buying a property and, they're first-time homeowners, you walk them through the steps of what's going to happen next. Because those things can be a little bit nerve-wracking. Just like buying your first home is nerve-wracking, selling your home can be just as nervous for some people if they don't know the steps. So, Good stuff. All right, did you have any other questions or anything else you wanted to go over?
No, thank you. Anyway, I filled up a paper here with ideas, and I'm great. I'm glad I caught your call.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great. Don't forget to shoot me an email, nathan@larryjones.com, and I'll get you over those lists there.
I'll do that when we finish the call.
Sure, great. Okay, so let's open it up for at least another question or two, at least one more question here. And if you have a question and you're on the call, you can hit *6 to unmute your phone. *6.
Hey, Nathan, this is Alex Flores.
Hey, Alex, how are you?
All right. I had a question regarding, well, actually, a realtor gave me this idea because, you know, the property I'm trying to sell in Fruithurst, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
She actually gave me an idea. There's a elementary school like 3 minutes away from the property, and it's a pretty mm-hmm. elementary school. Everyone wants their kids to go there, and she was like, I would love to see a teacher in that happening. So my question is, I know on the internet, I looked it up already, and all the teachers' emails are on the internet, and I shoot them an email mm-hmm. like saying property for sale 3 minutes away from, to a month. Will I get in trouble for that? Or?
Well, this is a great question, by the way. And actually, this has come up before. I had a friend of mine who was an investor, and he was listing a property, and he wanted to sell a property. And he had a friend who was involved in the local school board. There are probably local community teacher groups or community school boards or something like that in that area, or maybe your realtor can point you to it or something like that. The only thing is, don't collect emails. If someone has a whole bunch of emails, make sure it's not like spamming people. That's really important. Or if you did like a flyer, if you did have some kind of, someone to go out there maybe in the local area and put out flyers. But most of the time, there are like community boards, they call them bulletin boards or pinup boards that are digital, and you can post, people post property there. Can you just say that again? What is her goal, the agent's goal to do? Where does she want to do the marketing?
Well, it wasn't my agent. It was, cause I was calling agents to let them know I have a property for sale by owner, and I'm willing to give them 3% if they bring me a buyer. But mm-hmm. and then she mentioned she would love to see a teacher in that property because it's 3 minutes away from the school. So I was looking up the school, and each teacher and each person that works there, they have an email. So I was just going to email, just one time, mm-hmm. not send them a bunch of emails, just so they all get it. I have a property.
Right.
Maybe in the subject I'll put property for sale 3 minutes away from or whatever, from school. And
you could try that. Just be careful with whether it's you or someone else. If you have a whole bunch of emails and they've never emailed you before, you don't have email going back and forth. If you blast out an email to a bunch of people, it just registers your email as spam. That's the only thing. So just be careful with that because there's, issues with that. So if you have one specific person or five specific people, then I don't see why not. I think a better option, if you know there's a school in the area, have you put out any yard signs around that area or?
I put yard signs, not around the school area, but just around my yard, and then also towards the highway. Yeah.
Towards the highway. Okay. All right. Does that sign say 3-bed, 2-bath? It says about detail about the property and then your phone number, right? I think so.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe trying a different location. I'm all for community boards and pinup boards. Maybe there's a place that either parents go to in that local community or, you know, teachers go to in that local community online, you know, groups or something like that. I think that's probably a good thing. You might even want to call the school and talk to either a secretary or something like that and say, hey, you know, we have a local property in the area that we're offering. Is there any community bulletin boards or post boards online, offline, that kind of thing that we can, you know, the school might have it. The school might even say, yeah, we have one for free or, you know, whatever. Maybe, you know, I don't know, but you can get creative and say, hey, if you have a, you know, I like to sponsor or whatever, I don't know, make a donation, whatever it is. You know, I've seen people do all kinds of stuff. I remember this, and the reason why I bring that up is I remember this client I was working with, and there was a school also in the area, and they made, I think it was like a $50 donation to the school to put the property on the bulletin board. That was like their way in. But she didn't sell the property through the school. Get this. She actually sold the property. She went to all the local bars, and she, and you know, sometimes bars have community boards, like business card boards and stuff like that, local cafes. You can ping your business card. She actually went to a bunch of bars and other cafes, and she pinned the property, a flyer of the property, and she sold it from one of the bars. You know, but that same woman told me that she actually donated $50 to the local school to post it on their, like, bulletin board or something like that, because, you know, she kind of had the same idea, like working with teachers and stuff. So the school didn't get anything, but the flyer at the bar did, you know, interesting enough. So anyway, you might want to try something like that, but I think maybe calling the principal or the secretary or something like that, not the principal, maybe, you know, someone there at the school, they could probably direct you to a resource, you know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And I think from our last email, Alex, I would say, again, just to reiterate what I said, is just wait to get a few more bodies in the property. You know, get more eyeballs inside the property before you do anything else. Right. That's going to be most important. At least give it a shot to see, you know, what happens first. Like I was explaining, like I had a property that, you know, we got really cheap and it needed a bunch of work, you know, needed thousands of dollars of work. But we said, wait a second, before we fix this thing, let's get some bodies in there. Let's see what happens. Let's see what these people say, see what these new buyers want to say, you know. So I just waited on the repairs, and it didn't take long. It was like three people, within three or four people, the third or fourth one said, we'll take it the way it is, you know. So, so just to reiterate that. Cool.
Okay.
Good stuff. All right. All right. That's going to be the last question for today, because we're coming up to the end of the call here, or end of the hour. You can also listen to all of these calls in the archives of the Inner Circle members area. If you have any wonder where that is or having trouble accessing that, just shoot me an email at nathan@larrygoins.com, and I'll send you instruction on how to access that and go back to any pre-records that we have. Also, if you want any of the resources, maybe the ways to find motivated sellers that I talked about earlier on this call, shoot me an email for that as well. And then I'll see you back here on Wednesday, the second Wednesday of next month, and that's where we'll do our deal analysis call. So thanks so much, guys, for joining in and sharing what you're working on, what you're doing, and your experiences. Just keep this in mind as you move forward. Continually make offers, but most importantly, get disciplined with what you're doing. Like, stay focused and disciplined with a routine. If you could think back, I know there's some people on here that, you know, do real estate full-time, and there's some people who do it part-time, but just be as disciplined in your business of real estate, your real estate business. Be as disciplined as that as if you're working your job. You know, if you show up at a certain time, then show up to your real estate business at a certain time. If you, you know, have, you know, five tasks to do at your job, then make sure you have five tasks to get that must get done by, you know, in your real estate business. Kind of have that same mentality, that same discipline as if you are working or employed for your own company, your imaginary boss, you know, in your own business. Sometimes that can be the hardest thing. Being an entrepreneur or a business owner, it can be sometimes the hardest part is in our mind and the discipline of doing our business every day because sometimes we can veer off the different roads because we may not have that manager or may not have that boss who's, you know, breathing over our shoulder saying, hey, you got to get this done. So you got to have that motivation and that discipline to say, okay, I must get these things done every day. One thing I do, and I'll let this be the last tip of the call, is I use something even as simple like a free software like Google Keep. That's Google, then K-E-E-P, simple application on the phone. I just put down, I have a list that says the 10 things I must get done today. And I just hammer through that list. Maybe small things, maybe big things, but I just know that I've got to get those things done that day. So that's just something that you got to get in a routine of. Just wanted to share that with you because I know sometimes that could be the biggest challenge in our lives and our business, just staying focused and disciplined. Go out there and make it happen. If you have any questions, you can email me, Nathan@LarryGoins.com, and I'll see you next time. Thanks so much, everyone.